Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
News, Pete Hegseth has actually cleared a major hurdle in his confirmation battle to become defense secretary. Yes, it's true that that disgrace, Lisa Murkowski, is going to block him and vote no, or try to block him and vote no, but he's cleared the filibuster hurdle, and he will be confirmed as defense secretary. That's the good news, and it's great news, actually, because I'm tired of the swamp winning. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210. On X, at Rich Zeoli, and thank you for being here on a busy Thursday afternoon. So, yeah, Murkowski came out and said she was going to oppose Pete Hegseth. I'm not surprised. Are you surprised? Who would be surprised by that? The question, of course, was McConnell, and it was Susan Collins, and it was this jerk from Utah. So that was the question. But as long as there was not going to be another Republican rebelling, then J.D. Vance can step in and he could vote to break a tie if necessary. And as long as there wasn't going to be a filibuster, and now they have cleared the filibuster hurdle, so Hegseth will get in there. That's some good news. All right? That's some good news. And that makes me happy. So, Tulsi Gabbard. Unfortunately, though, is facing bipartisan condemnation, and so is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but I still believe that they're going to get through. I really do. You know, John Ratcliffe was confirmed a few moments earlier this afternoon. He was confirmed as the director of the CIA. And they asked Senator Rand Paul about it. And Rand Paul was like, look, President Trump won. He won by a big majority. And he has the right to put his people in there who he wants to put in. Rubio was basically unanimous. And Ratcliffe had it was very, very much across bipartisan lines that he was confirmed as CIA director. I worry about Tulsi. I worry about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And I was worried about Pete Hegseth. But now, apparently, according to the news, we don't have to worry about him. He should get confirmed. Of course, until it's a done deal, it's not a done deal. So we'll pay attention to that and obviously monitor it as it goes on until the vote, which could be tomorrow. But they're playing these procedural games. And the procedural games they're playing is they're doing these 30-hour debates, which is nonsense. Just trying to drag this process out. These 30-hour debates, and then they have to go to the next person and wait 30 hours, and then the next person. And it's just more games that they're playing. It's not going to accomplish anything. But they love playing games, because then it gives them the opportunity to go to the microphone and grandstand. And Chuck Schumer loves a good grandstand. Oh, you know who else loves a good grandstand is Larry Krasner. So, you know, I got a story the other day. Somebody sent me that Larry Krasner was going to start charging the individuals who were either had their sentences pardoned or commuted by President Trump in regards to January the 6th. And I never was able to find an actual news story about it. But it turns out that Larry Krasner is considering bringing state charges against certain individuals who were either pardoned or commuted who live in Pennsylvania. And what I can't understand for the life of me is where his jurisdiction is here, because last time I checked, the United States Capitol building was in Washington, D.C. Larry Krasner is not the prosecutor of Washington, D.C. He's the prosecutor of Philadelphia, which is not in Washington, D.C. I mean, at one time, it was the nation's capital. But it's not now. So I don't think there's a provision that says if it was ever the nation's capital, then you've got jurisdiction over whatever the new capital is. You know what I mean? So like, well, it was Philadelphia, so now it's D.C. But you still have jurisdiction over D.C. because you were one, because it was one time Philadelphia and you're Philadelphia's district attorney. I don't think that provision works. So I don't think that's going to go anywhere. Also, there's a double jeopardy aspect of this, too. And I understand that there's differences between federal crimes and state crimes. But clearly, there's nothing state-related about January the 6th. And I personally have a real problem when either the feds go after people who were found not guilty on state charges, or the states do it to people that were found not guilty on federal charges or were commuted or pardoned. I find it to be grotesque. It violates the spirit of double jeopardy, whether or not it really violates double jeopardy. And it's complicated because it's not exactly trying the person on the same crime necessarily, because it's trying them of a like crime. So it's like, well, that crime is also just like our crime, but it's not the same crime because it's like our crime. And so therefore, we can charge you in state court, even though you were found not guilty in federal court, or vice versa. It's grotesque. It is absolutely flies in the face of the double jeopardy provision in the Constitution. And I'm sorry, but anybody who argues otherwise is a tough on crime lunatic who's willing to burn the Constitution just to get the bad guy. And we've learned our lesson on that, have we not? You don't burn the Constitution to get the bad guy. The bad guy has to go free? Fine. The Constitution has to endure. And hopefully at one point the Supreme Court will settle that question once and for all, because, yeah, you know, they change a couple words here and there, and it's essentially the same law. But they go, well, we got you. We got you on the state level. We got you on the federal level because the jury wouldn't find you. Now, that's different from a civil trial. And obviously, if you're found not guilty in a crime, but say— well, I mean, the classic example is OJ, and then they sue him in civil court, and then they find him guilty in civil court, and he has to pay money, and, you know, there's no jail time associated with it. So the double jeopardy provision doesn't apply in civil court. And also, there's a different burden of proof, and I don't need to get into all that. I'm not a lawyer, but Larry Krasner has no jurisdiction in this. I mean, nothing that happened on January the 6th, whether you find January 6th to be the worst day in American history or you find it to be a bunch of people walking through and taking selfies, is irrelevant to Larry Krasner's jurisdiction over this. There's nothing whatsoever about January 6th that anyone can argue violates a state law. It didn't even happen in a state. It happened in the District of Columbia. So there's nothing in there where Larry Krasner can claim a jurisdictional stake in this. He doesn't have to like it, but it doesn't give him the authority then to charge anybody because he's really offended by Trump's pardons. Well, so what? Two tough nookies. Well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't like all of Biden's pardons. I don't like lots of pardons. That doesn't change the fact that it's a pardon. The Constitution enables the president to grant pardons and clemency. And you don't have the authority to charge somebody with a crime that happened nowhere even near your freaking jurisdiction. That doesn't even violate another state crime because it didn't happen in a state. You idiot. But again, Krasner's just trying to make publicity for himself. He knows that that's not going anywhere. But it's just, it's grotesque is what it is. Like, why don't you focus on criminals actually in your jurisdiction? Like, focus on criminals in the city of Philadelphia. If you want to do something, do that. There's plenty of them to choose from. All right? You got lots of them to choose from. I know the whole, it doesn't get you all the attention. And you don't like, basically, those criminals in your mind are victims of society. Whereas the people on January the 6th are the true criminals. And you got to find a loophole that you can charge them in state court. For what? What happened that day that is any way a violation of Pennsylvania law or violates anything that would require the Philadelphia prosecutor to get involved? Nothing. So silly. Now, some of the January 6th protesters and rioters and other people who were pardoned, because Trump just pardoned everybody, well, they have been arrested on other charges relating to guns and things like that. And it goes back to the old adage. If the government wants to get you, the government's going to find a way to get you. And for some of these people, they had other offenses, and then they went after them for having firearms, and a lot of that's tricky. And, you know, maybe we'll get into the individual cases of that as time goes on. We're still kind of learning a lot about this, but Julie Kelly's all over it. And again, I find it to be violating the spirit of the president's pardon and clemency. Whether you agree with it or not, doesn't give the right of federal law enforcement to say, well, we don't like it, so therefore we're gonna still find a way to lock this guy up on something else. You know what I mean? And that's exactly what this is. It's I don't have to like something in order for it to be constitutional. Like, for example, you heard in the CBS News report about birthright citizenship, and this federal judge has declared that Trump's executive order is unconstitutional, blatantly unconstitutional. So Trump signed an executive order ending what is known as birthright citizenship for somebody who's born on U.S. soil. And this judge said it's blatantly unconstitutional. What makes it blatantly unconstitutional? His opinion? Because let's understand something. When the 14th Amendment was ratified, nobody at the time thought it applied to people who did not have a legal claim to the United States of America. And the best evidence of that is twofold. One is just the fact of the day, which is that back then, ambassadors, diplomats, all these fancy people couldn't take a flight. They had to take a boat. And they would be in the United States of America for months or years. And many of them would have children here. Many of them would literally raise their families here on diplomatic missions because it was just too much to go back and forth. And quite frankly, you know, you get seasick. And they didn't invent Dramamine for like another 100 years or something. So I don't blame a lot of these people. They would just basically live in the United States. The ambassador to France would live here. And they, every now and then he'd, you know, send letters back to the parliament, go back like once a year and have Christmas there or whatever and come back. I mean, it's just the way it was. And they had mistresses and lovers and kids with those mistresses. But no one ever believed, with the exception of the mistresses, that the children of ambassadors and diplomats would become American citizens if they were born in the United States during that diplomatic mission. When it ended, they left. The kids didn't stay behind and say, well, now I'm an American citizen because I was born here. No, because your parents did not have a legal claim to the United States of America. They were not legal. They were not citizens. They were here on diplomatic business. Therefore, you are not a citizen because they don't have the legal basis for you to become a citizen. And that has always been understood. 14th Amendment was passed and ratified so that freed slaves would be considered United States citizens. Okay? And at the time, all the people that were advocating for the passage of the 14th Amendment were specifically making the point back then, this did not apply to foreigners. Because there were people that came into this country to work, and it did not apply to foreigners. And they would say that very often, because back then citizenship actually meant something. So the idea would be, no, listen, this is, we got to tie up this loophole here so that it's very clear that the slaves, now freed slaves, were American citizens and not property. Remember, we had the Dred Scott decision. I love when the left whines about precedent, Supreme Court precedent. Like, in how if something's precedent, it can never be overturned. How's this one for precedent? Supreme Court at one point said that people can be property. In the case of Dred Scott, a slave who escaped, freed, and then, well, he was still property in the eyes of the Supreme Court, a racist Supreme Court decision, obviously, blatantly unconstitutional. And the 14th Amendment, among other things, it had lots of goals, but it was also to overcome that decision and just make it very, very clear. All these slaves were American citizens. All right. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. These people are Americans. Many years later, there was a case involving a Chinese guy who was working on the railroads back then. You know, a lot of Chinese people came here and built railroads. And this is long before they built all the crap we buy on Amazon.com, long before that. I don't even think there was an Amazon back then. I don't know. And if Jeff Bezos was alive back then, I don't think the woman he dated back then would have as much plastic surgery as the one he's dating now, because I don't think they had plastic surgery back then. I'm not a historian, but like in the 1890s, I don't think Botox was a thing yet. I don't even think Botox, as far as it being a bioweapon, was a thing. I don't think they invented botulism toxin for another couple years. You know what I mean? Long before it had uses of making people's wrinkles go away, they did use it for things like ethnic cleansing. But I digress. Point is that this guy's working on the railroad, and then he sues and says he's an American citizen. And what the Supreme Court ruled in that case was that his parents had a legal claim to the United States of America. Therefore, he had a legal claim to the United States of America. Therefore, the 14th Amendment applied to him. But in the Supreme Court's analysis of that, they clearly looked at the fact of the parents having a legal claim to America, to being citizens of the United States of America, or having legal justification to be in the United States when this guy was born. Okay? That is very different from the idea that I'm a Chinese guy or a Russian, and I get my wife and I say, let's go on a baby vacation. And I don't mean a baby moon. Baby moons are fun, by the way. A baby moon is right before the baby's born. You go on a little extended vacation, just you and the missus, and you get away for a little bit before the kid comes and your life is turned upside down. And you never have sleep or sex again. I mean, the S word, you know. That's what a baby moon's all about. So like in the case of Patrick, Bridget and I had a baby moon, went down to Cape Charles, Virginia, had a very long weekend down there. It was wonderful. Patrick was born. We did a baby moon for all three of our kids. But with Reagan, it was like a much shorter baby moon. But it's great. It's a wonderful thing. I highly recommend it if you've got a kid on the way or thinking about having a kid. That's different from a baby vacation where these people will come to the United States of America. They'll pay big bucks for this. They get the hotel room. They get the restaurant reservations. Some of the good ones, too. The ones that we can't get. And then they have a baby here, so that baby can be a U.S. citizen. And then they go back to Russia or China or whatever, and now the baby's a U.S. citizen. And this is an industry, a very, very profitable industry. The problem, though, is that those parents don't have a claim to the United States of America. So they schedule these trips for when the baby's due, and then the baby comes in and is born, you know, at the hotel in California. And now the baby's an American, and then they go back, and the baby's able to get a passport, and then all the bennies of being an American citizen. Nobody in their right mind thinks the founders ever would have thought, or I should say the framers of the 14th Amendment would have ever thought that was okay. Because nobody would have done that back then. How the hell would anybody have even thought, and why would they have thought about doing that, coming to the United States by boat back then, for the purposes of having a baby here, so that they go back and have dual citizenship back in France or Italy or where, who, like back then, who would have ever thought of that? Nobody. There was no need for that at the time. So, and also too, there was no fancy service organizing that for you. It just was not a thing. It's a thing now. So it's not even a question. There's nothing cruel about it. Most countries around the world, the most civilized countries, and even ones that are not particularly civilized, understand this. So that if Bridget and I were on vacation in Europe and were pregnant and had a baby, that baby would not be a citizen of that country. They'd be like, congratulations, have fun, but that baby's not a citizen. Now, there's exceptions to that, obviously. If your child's born in a military base, there's different exceptions for when an American citizen is born overseas and still maintains American citizenship. And on the case of a vacation, if a baby's born but the parents are American citizens, and usually it's worked out where the baby is still an American citizen, even though he wasn't born on U.S. soil. And these things get complicated, and we don't need to get into all of that. But the point is this. The 14th Amendment was never intended so that a Chinese couple could spend 2 to 3 weeks in America on vacation so that kid could be born an American citizen. Never. This is not even up for debate. But of course, it'll be debated. And ultimately, go to the Supreme Court. And what the Supreme Court of the United States of America has to do is just look at what the intent of the 14th Amendment was at the time the 14th Amendment was ratified. It's not hard. Like everything else, there's minutes. There's a record from the debate on the 14th Amendment in the Congress, in various state legislatures. There's various news articles that were written back then. It's not that hard. Just got to do a little bit of homework. And if you can find me anything that says, we are doing this so that somebody can come into the United States of America, have a kid on U.S. soil, for the purposes of that kid being a citizen, then I will say I was wrong. But you're not going to find that in the historical record, period. You'll find the opposite. In the historical record, it will clearly show that those advocating for the ratification of the 14th Amendment were purposely making it very clear this would not apply to foreigners. It would not apply to them. Period. That's in the historical record. So if the Supreme Court of the United States does its job, it will end birthright citizenship. this notion of birthright citizenship. I don't even think that's the right term, because in order to have birthright citizenship, that implies that your parents have a legal basis in the United States. The mom, because the baby comes out of the has a legal basis, a legal claim to the United States of America for the purposes of citizenship. And then the baby then would also have it. That's very, very plain and simple and very clear. Clear for everybody to understand. This judge in Washington is a classic lefty. I believe the Constitution should be interpreted for the year 2025. Well, that's not how we do things. We look at it from the basis of time in which the amendment was passed. Not through the lens of today, but through the lens of when it was actually ratified, which was 18-something or other. We look at it through that lens and we say, what was the intent? Luckily, we have some people on the Supreme Court that believe that that is the job of the Supreme Court, just to look at it through the lens of the time in which either that law or that amendment was passed or ratified, the original intent, textualism, understanding all of those things. Yes, a comma matters. It really does. Clauses matter. The late, great Justice Antonin Scalia, in his decision on the Second Amendment, which is one of the, I think, greatest court decisions, was very clear about breaking down the context of the Second Amendment and how it's written and how the clauses were written back in the 1700s versus how we use grammar today. In fact, if you were to put that into the Grammarly machine, it would find it all kinds of wrong, but not if you did it in 1787. It would have found it to be just fine, and that the clauses would clearly show that this was not just something that was subject to, or just, I should say, just provided for a militia. It was the people who represented the militia, and that's why we're all able to possess firearms. It was a very, very important decision in that case, obviously. So, long story short is this. Thank God we've got Gorsuch on there, we've got Alito on there, and we've got Kavanaugh on there, and I hope to God Amy Coney Barrett will see the light, and thank God we have Justice Clarence Thomas on there, and Roberts, who the hell knows with that guy. And with Amy Coney Barrett, I'd love to say for sure that she'd be a yes vote on this. She should be, but she disappointed me. She's disappointed me a number of times. We know where the three lefty judges will go. But this really should be a 6-3 decision in favor of saying that, yes, the 14th Amendment does not guarantee citizenship to those born on U.S. soil unless they have a legal basis for being in the United States of America that would justify citizenship. In other words, the mom's a citizen, the dad's a citizen, or some other circumstance that would enable that. But just simply being here because you're on vacation at Disney World is not enough. That's not enough. Being born on U.S. soil in and of itself is not enough. If it was, then all of those people who were children of diplomats and ambassadors would all be American citizens, and they weren't. So you just go back in time, you look at the record, and then you could form the basis of what the intent of the 14th Amendment was. So. And if you don't like that, then ratify the Constitution. Ratify the Constitution to say that anyone born on U.S. soil is hereby a U.S. citizen. But I'm telling you, if you do that, that would be a huge mistake, because that would be unlike most of the civilized world, who doesn't do it that way. And there's a reason why they don't do it that way. Because we don't want people just simply coming to the United States of America for the purposes of having a child who will then have U.S. citizenship, and then going back to that country and having no allegiance to this country. There's an important principle about that, and that is allegiance to the United States of America, which again is something that the founders and the framers were acutely aware of, which is why even for the presidency, you have to be here for a certain period of time before you can run for president, even if you are, in fact, meet the requirement of being a United States citizen, born as a U.S. citizen. Allegiance to America matters, because we don't want U.S. citizens growing up in China or another country and then coming here and saying, well, I'm a U.S. citizen, I get to vote, and I'm going to vote in the interests of my real country and abuse my citizenship for the purposes of voting to hurt this country that I happen to have been born on soil of. But I have no stake, no claim, no love for, quite frankly. So there is a reason why, in a national security love of country perspective, that bet's there. And it's obviously there for that reason, too, because we don't want people choosing to have children in the United States of America so that they could one day utilize those children to work against the interests of the United States of America. Citizenship matters. Citizenship is supposed to be special. And the idea is that we all protect our citizenship. We protect the country that we love, that we're citizens of. People earn their citizenship, and they can earn their citizenship. And when they do, and they have children, those children will be citizens. But simply crossing the border illegally and having a child does not make that child eligible for U.S. citizenship, because those parents did not have a legal basis for being in the United States of America that would afford that child citizenship. It's really not that complex if you look at it through the lens of the 1860s and not through the lens of the year 2025 or the 1880s, whenever it was. I'm not good with dates. 1950, whatever it was. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. We got a lot to chat about today. It's a big show. President Trump spoke to the bond villains at the WEF, the World Economic Forum in Davos. What did he say to the bond villains? We'll talk about it. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
We got called out, Justin. We got called out by our buddy Jimmy Fallon's show, Fox Across America. So my question is, can you find a way to somehow dump his show tonight at 7 o'clock in an act of revenge?
Oh, I can easily make that happen.
Good. It's what they deserve. Listen to this, DeSantis. They tweet out yesterday, Fox Across America, the official show account, Mayor Sherelle Parker's major flub might not be the best omen for this Sunday. Sorry, Zeoli. And then they have Jimmy reading and quoting the playing the Philadelphia mayor. Now, I'm not going to ask DeSantis because he knows less about sports than I do, but he does know dates. And it was 1868 that the 14th Amendment was ratified, by the way, 1868. I said it was 1860 or 1880s or something like that. I get your numbers. Yeah, the numbers always confuse me. I wind up reversing them all the time. I have dyscalculia. Anyway, Justin, are we going to win this game on Sunday against the team formerly known as the Redskins?
I have faith. I have faith in Saquon Barkley. I have faith in the defense. I just, my rationale for the Eagles winning is Jaden Daniels is a rookie, so he's unexperienced in the big game. Everybody on this team, pretty much everybody on this team, was here in 2022 when we went on the first Super Bowl run. So they have big game experience that Washington severely lacks. And it's just, I do think it'll be close. I'm not going to be as boisterous as I was against the Rams, where, you know, it was a little closer than I liked. So I'll say the birds are going to sneak by and we'll be partying on Broad Street come Sunday night.
So grease the poles.
Grease the poles.
All right. I like it. If we don't win, what happens?
It's another box in, it's another checkbox in the long and very depressing history of Philly sports teams that should have done better, that ultimately fell before the final hurdle. But I'm used to that at this point, so it doesn't hurt much.
Can I offer some hope?
Sure.
All right. So if you were looking at the betting odds right now, of the teams left, there's four of them. The Eagles are actually the favorites right now to win the Super Bowl, even ahead of the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's good news. And then if you look at the odds for Sunday's game specifically, Vegas has the Eagles as 6-point favorites.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty big spread.
That's great news if that's the case. Really great news.
Hopefully Vegas is correct.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's hope for that. That's fantastic. Now, if we do lose, can we impeach Mayor Sherelle Parker and say that she was the reason why?
She's definitely going to catch a lot of heat if they lose.
Okay.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. Rightfully so. No doubt about that. And Nick Foles, the coach guy.
Nick Sirianni.
That's why I was right.
Close
Sirianni.
Enough.
He could be in jeopardy if we don't if we lose this game.
Very much so, and rightfully so. We really should win this game, and it shouldn't be that close. We dominated them in the regular season, except for the one game at the end of the season where Hurts went out with a concussion. This should be an easy Eagles win, but I said that last week, and I almost ate crow. So,
well, I'm going to make homemade cheesesteaks on Sunday. That's what I'm going to do. I'm taking tomorrow off because I have to rest up. I'm physically exhausted from this friggin' staph infection, and these antibiotics are killing me. And so I'm going to take tomorrow off. And I talked to Greg about this. He's like, dude, you got to rest up. You got to get better here. So I'm going to do that. But I'm gonna bake some bread. I think I'm going to make homemade cheesesteaks again on Sunday. I don't know. I posted a picture on Instagram. If you saw those babies. Oh, man. Puts Angelo's to shame. Just saying. You know what I mean? The key is the sesame bread. You got to have the sesame seed bread. Parker jinxed Josh Shapiro. That's right. That's true. And he didn't get selected as Kamala's running mate. Yeah. So, Sherelle Parker, if we lose, I say we recall her as mayor, impeach her, whatever it is. I blame the mayor.
I'm a little bit nervous now. I was optimistic a second ago, but she did jinx Josh Shapiro, no doubt.
Yeah, she came out on Friday and said Josh Shapiro and Kamala Harris are going to make America great again or something to the effect of that. And then he didn't pick her and then even pick him. And then even worse, she had the indignity to embarrass him by announcing Tim Walz in the city of Philadelphia. Just really rubbing it in Josh Shapiro's face. Like, listen, pal, not only did you not get picked, we're coming to your hometown to insult you and remind you you didn't get picked. Brutal. Just brutal, if you ask me. But anyway, all right, well, let's hope the Eagles win and hope we have something to brag about. I know my buddy Mike Donahue will be watching. He should be zooming in any minute now. Is he joining us? He's ready? Well, then let me welcome to the show the chairman of the Cape May County Republican Party, a great friend of mine personally, and he just got a very new big gig with Trump World. I want to welcome to the show Chairman Mike Donahue. Mr. Chairman, how are you today, my friend?
Hey, Rich. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How you feeling? Any better?
I'm getting there. I got the inaugural flu, so I'm getting there.
Inaugural flu.
There's all kinds of diseases in Washington. You got to be careful.
Yeah, well, you were partying so much, your liver probably is suffering from all kinds of ailments. Who are you kidding?
We'll get through.
So you called me last week and you told me you had some news to share. And this is very, very exciting stuff for you and Matt Rooney, of course, the host of the Matt Rooney Show right here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. So tell us about it, man.
So, I mean, you know a little bit about it. Your listeners, I'm sure some of them know a little bit about it. But America First Policy Institute was created several years ago, sort of right after the last Trump administration, for a place to keep the America First fires burning. You know, those were dark days in early 2021 when many of us who had supported the president and, were waiting to be carted off in the cattle cars, I guess. But, you know, luckily we came through that, and AFPI operating out of Northern Virginia, a lot of good people held it all together and built what has become this just tremendous organization, advancing America First policies. So I think they were up last count about six cabinet members that came out of AFPI, including Linda McMahon, who was the chair as the education secretary, Brooke Rollins, who's the agricultural secretary nominee, had her hearing today. You had Pam Bondi, you had Lee Zeldin, you had John Ratcliffe, you have General Kellogg, who's the envoy for Ukraine, all came out of America First Policy Institute, and a whole host of others who were important roles in the administration. So about 6 weeks ago, a friend of Matt and I from AFPI called and said, hey, we want to start a Jersey chapter. And we spent that time in a succession of meetings and stakeholder discussions and meeting people in DC and other places to talk about bringing AFPI to New Jersey. We launched just a few days before the inauguration, and it was perfect timing because we launched here in Jersey through a release and went down to DC and spent the entire weekend in AFPI meetings with fundraisers and staffers and heads of what they call the centers there. It was a tremendous weekend. As a political junkie, as I know you are, you would have loved it. You couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting a cabinet member or senator or somebody else. And just really neat to be immersed in that whole, as you said, Trump world thing that we've been a part of, you know, and supporting for so long, but to be sitting with the principals sort of was really cool. So we're bringing that to Jersey now, and I can go into detail about that with you, but it's exciting, Rich. It's something we haven't had. It's going to be a center of gravity to really drive that agenda here in Jersey in this cycle, which is the all important cycle. Right. With the gubernatorial race, only us and Virginia have gubernatorial races in this off year. And I think we have a real shot. I mean, if you look at 21, what Jack Chitterelli did there, if you look at 24, what President Trump did in New Jersey, mm-hmm. I mean, all of the indicators point to the right. Trump came in and won Passaic County and other places that a Republican hasn't won in decades. And there's real movement there. And our position, our belief, and I think it's true, is that these America First positions are what drew voters to President Trump. And if we abandon them now, we're fools. If we double down on them now, it's going to enhance our chances of success in 25.
Well, first of all, Mike, I want to congratulate you, Chairman Mike Donohue, and Matt Rooney for being selected for this. I think it's an outstanding pick. You guys deserve it. Nobody works harder, and it's an excellent, excellent selection. You have worked your tail off in New Jersey politics for decades. I've been right there with you along the way, and you're a tireless fighter. So I'm very happy, proud of you. This is going to be great stuff. Now that I've said all that and kissed up to you, basically, I need you to invite me to the White House Easter egg roll.
You're in.
That's all I was looking for. So talk to us about what the priorities of America First Policy Institute New Jersey chapter will be. And yes, you're right. We're heading into 2025 gubernatorial election. Scott Pressler's engaged with registering voters. Congressman Jeff Van Drew got a big win with President Trump coming out and saying, you know, thank you, Congressman. Your hard work on defeating the windmills. You, Donohue, were the guy who went after Orsted in your capacity in Cape May and killed them. You were the Orsted killer. You had the shirt on that said Orr's dead last time we were together at the Grand Hotel of Cape May. And so you deserve a lot of credit on that, along with Jeff Van Drew. But look, well, this is a great moment for us here. So tell me the priorities that you guys are going to be looking to institute for New Jersey.
Right. So, you know, this is the question, and it's I've wrapped my head around it, that these policies are what really drive people to be involved. So you try to separate policy from politics, doesn't really work because it all fits together. But it starts with the policy that Linda McMahon said has been quoted by friends, that if you get the policy right, the politics will follow. So in other words, what are your positions, right? That's what people want to know. What are your positions? Well, how about we close the border? And how about we take that burden off of your community of hundreds, if not thousands, of illegal immigrants coming in and stressing your school system, stressing your public safety nets? I mean, all of those things that come from that, these are the same messages that Trump carried to the country that led him to this landslide victory, won the popular vote, right? Nobody said he could do it, but he did. So it's these America First policies, Jersey-centric. We look at this affordability thing, Rich, that we've talked about for years. We need to repackage that in a way that people can understand it. It's the ability to thrive. It's the ability for your family to thrive. Can your family be better off next year than it is this year? Or do you just scrape by, as we all do in Jersey, because Trenton just takes and takes and takes? You know, it's the old Ronald Reagan things. You know, if it moves, tax it. Mm-hmm. They do that here, right? Like if it moves regulated, or if it whatever makes income tax it. The America First approach to these issues is really a American citizen first. So that has to be the first obligation of government. when they look at anything they're going to do, how does it affect the average citizen? How does it affect their pocketbook? How does it affect their kitchen table, their ability to provide for their children? And you know, politicians don't do that. That's the last thing on their mind. So those are the issues that we intend to drive. We'll be putting policy positions together that are New Jersey specific. Those will start coming online very shortly. But it's all of those things we've talked about. How do we get taxes down? How do we put politicians in a position where they're not going to just simply keep burdening the taxpayer every time you turn around? How do we put pressure on people in our own caucuses and the legislature on the Republican side to say, you know what, we're not just going to be part of the club anymore. We're going to advance these policies that President Trump supported that have moved our politics to make New Jersey a swing state instead of deep blue, which is where I think we are. You look at those two big statewide cycles in 21 and 24, we have moved to the right each time, and we're going to continue to move in that direction. So the AFPI is a non-partisan, officially doesn't endorse 501c3. We drive these policies that put American citizens first. And if your policies aren't doing that, then they're not aligned. So moving forward, we're going to focus on those things. And I think it really comes down to what it came down to in 24. How does this help my family? It doesn't help my family to be forcing girls' sports to take men to play in them. That doesn't help my family. It doesn't help my family to be, you know, having all these crazy things in our schools, having all these ultra woke agendas that diversity, equity, inclusion, equal outcomes for all people, regardless of their merit. None of that helps my family. People are over that. It's going quickly out of fashion. And people want to hear about how you're going to help their family, how you're going to help their small business thrive. And that's what these messages will be all about.
Well said. Chairman Mike Donohue is with me. By the way, some breaking news, keeping his promise. President Trump just signed an executive order to declassify the files around the assassinations of President John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., and Robert Kennedy. Just happening a few moments ago. So pretty big stuff right there, Mike.
Huge, huge.
Yeah.
Well, big for me. I'm an Irish Catholic, and I'm a little student of that stuff, weirdo who's read all the JFK books. And man, it would be nice if this country finally had closure on those issues after all this time.
Right.
And I hope that Trump will help us do that. Yeah, that's huge. That's just huge. Look, the win you mentioned.
And by the way, I am too. I'm a nerd with that stuff. When the movie JFK came out, the Oliver Stone movie, I read every book I could get my hands on about it. I was obsessed with it for years.
And
Gerald Posner, who's my buddy, who I love all his writings. He wrote the book Case Closed, arguing that it's just Lee Harvey Oswald. I don't know if I agree with Gerald Posner on that. I'm really curious what we're going to find out in these files.
He could be right. I've read his book. He could be right. It was well done, that book.
Yep.
It was a different angle, which I think got so much attention. But man, there's so much that points in the other direction. It's kind of hard to believe it was just Lee Harvey Oswald. But I mean, hopefully these documents will shed some light on it. I want to get back to real quick. You mentioned the windmills, the effort that we had here. You know, the Zeoli Army played such a huge role in that because those grassroots efforts really did help to shake Orsted. They didn't want that. And I was told by somebody at the very beginning who sort of knew what they didn't want. And we really pushed to help those grassroots groups like Protect Our Coast, New Jersey, Defend Brigantine Beach, a lot of those groups that came together locally to encourage them and to support them. And they really grew with the whales and the dolphins dying. And it was a huge element of everything we did. And I remember first time I think I came to the Grand and walking into that room with a couple hundred people at your show of the Zeoli Army and having that Fight Salty shirt on and how much they were engaged on these issues. It was huge. So thank you. Big shout out to the Zeoli Army for those efforts. Big shout out to Congressman Mandrew, who was the first, really the first upper sort of level. We had Vince Cerra in Brigantine, who's the mayor there, who was fighting this almost like John the Baptist and shouting in the wilderness. And then, you know, we started to bring the Kingman County Commissioners in, and then Congressman Mandrew got engaged on this. It really was like, whoa, the industry itself sat up and said, well, we have a real a congressman, real gravitas on the East Coast who was just engaged in opposition. They really took notice. And Jeff Andrew pushed that, had those field hearings, you know, pushed it in Congress. A lot of people don't know that Orsted went back to Congress to try to get more tax subsidies by being exempt from the Use American Steel and other provisions that they had to for the tax incentives. And I know that Congressman Andrew was, without any fanfare, instrumental in making sure that that didn't happen, which was another one of many nails in the coffin of that project. And now here we are, President Trump signing executive order to stop it all and review it all. And we're going to be very aggressive during that review period to provide, you know, defensible data and information to help the federal government make the decision to stop this stuff and ban it once and for all. So it's really, really was a happy day to see that EO signed. And just jubilation, and you can imagine, and texts and other things going around among the wind warriors with all the hard work that they did. And they all deserve a great deal of accolades for fighting and never giving up the fight on offshore wind. It's huge.
Yeah, well said. So many people that would come to the show and various groups of Long Beach Island all the way down to Cape May and even places up in North Jersey and in between. So it was terrific. President Trump put out the following statement a short time ago. He said, a special thank you to the great New Jersey Congressman Jeff Van Drew for his fight against a large scale windmill disaster, all caps, off the coast of southern New Jersey. It needed massive government subsidy, all caps. That was impossible to justify. Hopefully the project is dead and gone, as almost all unsightly and environmentally unsound windmill projects should be. Congratulations to the great people of New Jersey. You have finally, in all caps, won your war on stupidity. There you go, Mike Donahue.
No, it's tremendous. And I got to tell you that, you know, that this AFPI thing, it all flows together, right? Like, I won't mention any names, but there were some folks who were in the administration now who were in that energy space who texted me and said, here it is, you know, and the president has signed it. And it was just so tremendous. After all, I mean, that's consumed a good 3.5 years of my life, and that consumed is the right word, because I basically spent my time on offshore wind, on opposing it, not only on the legal front where we sued in both the state and federal courts and organizing, kind of quarterbacking the litigation, but also on the PR front, on the elected official front, on the grassroots NGO front. You know, that was the task that I was given by our commission director, Len Desiderio, who you know. And Lenny said to me, what do we need to do? And I said, we need to do everything. And so for about 3.5 years, that's what I did, and organized this effort and helped with this effort. And so many people came together to create this perfect storm for Orsted to look at and say, you know what? We're behind the eight ball. Supply chain is killing us. Inflation is killing us. This litigation is killing us. These grassroots people are killing us. This congressman's killing us. Let's get the hell out of here and sail back to Copenhagen. And we said adieu to Mads Nipper as he sailed off into the sunset. It was a great day. You were a huge part of it, as I told you, I think at the end of last year or down at the Grand or wherever. Like, thank you for hanging in there on these issues and driving them every time you're on the radio. It was a huge part of what we did. And I know it for a fact, because I know people sort of on the other side who told me they are hating everything you're doing, and it's driving them crazy. So, so, you know, we drove them all the way back to Denmark, which is a good thing for us.
I had a person come to me several months ago, probably about a year ago, and said, how much would it take for you to speak positively about the wind turbine project on the radio? And I said, there's not enough money that you could ever try to pay me that I would ever do that. Absolutely right. Not. Nothing. They would never. Never.
Listen, they underestimated who we are, right?
Yep.
I mean, they figured, hey, let's go down to Cape May County. We really don't like those people anyway. Trenton saw it the same way.
Yep.
Let's start there. They're a little tiny county. They can't really stand up to us, and we don't like their politics anyway down there. So let's go start there. I mean, look, man, you know, we live through hurricanes. We live, you know, we're down here. We're gritty. You want to come live? You like the Jersey Shore? Come down and check us out in January and February. I mean, that's when you earn your stripes as somebody that's in Jersey Shore. You know, I could walk through Stone Harbor naked at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and nobody else would see me. You know, that's where we are this time of year. Yeah, thank God for that. But that's, you know, I always say it's like the hurricane party. When the hurricane's coming, all the sane people leave, all the crazy people go to the bar. That's the Jersey Shore in the wintertime, right? We all go to the bar for January, February. But they didn't know who they were dealing with. They did not understand Cape May County. They didn't understand New Jersey. They didn't understand the fight. They were used to going into places where the skids were so greased that they could just come in and opposition didn't really matter. And I'm proud that New Jersey stood up to them. I'm proud of Congressman Mandrew. I'm proud of all those people who aligned with us to oppose offshore wind. And we prevailed. And I told them back in a meeting 4 years ago, I know you're racing against January 20th, 2025. I know it. I get it. Yeah. You want to get steel in the water before something changes in the White House. I get it. You know, but talk to us about all these issues we have, and they refuse to do it. So look, I'm not gloating, but maybe I am a little bit because it's a great day to have President Trump sign that executive order on offshore wind. And look, it'll continue to be an issue. We're going to continue to make sure it gets pushed in the right direction and all the way over the cliff after these reviews. But I think that's what these agencies will discover, that it was a flawed process. It should have never been able to advance the way that it did and put this thing out of its misery once and for all.
Mike Donahue, Mr. Chairman, great job. And best of luck with this new initiative with America First Policy Institute, New Jersey. We'll be talking again soon, my friend. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you so much, Rich. Good to see you.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right. The big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com, with two locations right now to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Go see him today for your perfect smile. President Trump, a flurry of executive orders, also saying that Ukraine's Zelensky is ready to make a deal, pardoning anti-abortion protesters. A whole lot just happened in the last few minutes. We'll bring it all to you straight ahead. Don't go away.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.